When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours here on WSB. So we have a special show for you today. At the beginning of the year, I talked about new tools that are going to help you build your business, help you think about the world differently, that are going to help you move forward as you deal with competition in your business life or in your personal life or in your financial life. We've had so much of that over the last few years, right? So we have four really interesting people for you to talk to today and listen from. You can always reach us online, 404-872-0750, or you can go to Twitter and follow me there, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, and certainly have a conversation with us as well. All of the guest information, as always, will go up on the website thinkglink.com, T-H-I-N-K-G-L-I-N-K.com. And if you aren't already signed up for the free weekly newsletter, listen to me. If you're not signed up for the free weekly newsletter, you better be. Go there, sign up today. My first guest is a woman named Christy Ross. She's the co-CEO and president of a company called Doug, Inc., D-O-U-G-H, which when I first saw it, I thought, this is awesome. We're going to have somebody in who's applied technology to the baking industry. But no, she's talking about money. And the other company is TastyTrade.com, which is a trading platform. Christy, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you, Elise? Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad to have you. Why don't we dig in, and you can start by just telling us how you got lucky enough to have a website that provides financial information and help and a trading platform and call it Doug.com.
Well, I have to say that we did actually really get lucky with that. We started out with TastyTrade.com, which is an online financial network, and we produce 8 hours of live programming every day, and we talk about the markets, and we provide a really wonderful new way to look at trading and do-it-yourself investing. And after we have been doing that for a while now, for 3 years, about a year and a half into it, we said, you know what, we really need to provide the retail investor with an app, with technology that goes along with the wonderful message that we send and we talk about every day. And so about a year and a half ago, we started building an app and tried to come up with a name for it, and the partners that we went into business with on this just happen to have that domain saved.
Just so sitting around doing nothing, Doug.com. We're not doing anything. Just use that. Oh, you couldn't ask for anything better. So one of the things that I know you were thinking was this whole idea of watch, learn, do. You can watch information on the marketplace, you can learn how to trade, and then you can do it all in one place. And I think it's helpful to point out that you were previously the CFO for thinkorswim.com, which was one of the first and certainly one of the very best places that you could trade options online.
That's exactly right. Thinkorswim was definitely an innovator of its time. It was at the forefront of, you know, the online trading era, right? And right now I feel like we're, you know, on the cusp of the, you know, online content marketing, you know, content marketing era. But absolutely, Thinkorswim truly changed the industry in the way that people had access to trading options. It used to be something that was just for floor traders, and now it's truly for the retail investor. So we've taken that and now created a different message. We've cleared out all the noise. For example, you go and you watch CNBC and you say, oh, I hear what's happening in the news. And, but really, what should I do in my own portfolio? Well, we actually, we clear that noise for you, and we show you a logical, mechanical approach to investing using options. And so that whole concept is what Tasty Trade is built off of, and then now the Dove platform. So I love that you did mention the watch, follow, and do, because that's exactly how we've structured Dove. We've taken the approach that if you watch our show, the Tasty Trade segments, and again, there's 8 hours of live programming with 6 shows and 40 different segments, we ask you, you can watch and you learn by watching, or you can actually follow real people, like real people that have real jobs every day, and you can follow them and watch their trades real time.
All right, here's what I love about that, because millennials, and I'm going to use my son Michael, who's 16, as an example. Michael learned how to play and learn and watches still video games, other people playing video games on YouTube. This is not, he's like, Mom, I'm not actually playing the video game. I'm watching somebody else play the video game. And it's a whole new way that spectator sports can be thought of. And in fact, some of these video games, like LOL, has become, you know, League of Legends, has become this, like, insane international thing where they've got $10 million prizes in international. And people literally will pack a 60,000-person stadium to watch some of these video games that have become such big spectator sports. And so what you've done is you've taken this idea of watching CNBC, which all of us now have grown up with, truly has that network has grown up, and you've now automated it and brought it to a place where it's actionable. Because I think for many people, CNBC or any of the other financial networks, Bloomberg, it's not really actionable. You don't know what you're supposed to do when, you know, Santelli goes into a rant about, you know, the Tea Party. You don't know what you're supposed to do in the stock market. You might know what you're supposed to do at the polling bowl, but you don't really know what you're supposed to do in the stock market. So I think that that's very interesting. And of course, you know, with your background working with automatic, automated traded, and then Chicago Stock Exchange, you know, that background combined with the content is really interesting. So content marketing is near and dear to my heart, because if you've listened, you probably haven't listened to the show because you're based in Chicago, but as my listeners in Atlanta know, I also own a company that does a lot of that, and we help companies with this idea that if you provide the content that people need, they will actually do what you want them to do. And I love that you have taken this concept really to the consumer level. What do your people talk about when, you know, they're doing the financial shows that you put on it? Are they doing mistakes that people make? Is it, could you be watching CNBC, or how did you think of all of that?
So we have the same team that was at Thinkorswim. So my co-CEO, he was one of the founders of Thinkorswim, and his trading, the depth of trading and understanding the markets, you know, he's been in and around those markets for, you know, over 30 years. So having a team with the depth of knowledge of the markets, you know, that's certainly helpful. Collectively, if you look at our executive team as well as our on-air talent, you know, we have, you know, over 200 years collectively of experience in this field. So one of the things that they talk about on air are different approaches, breaking down the barriers of traditional financial media. And let me give you a good example, because this is kind of the fundamental concept of what we put out there. We base all of this mostly off of statistics, so that you can clear the noise. You still have to have an opinion about the markets, but we show you that ultimately, if you're going to go buy stock, you are taking a 50-50 shot. It could go up, it could go down, right?
Right.
So instead,
you never know, even though people tell you they know, they don't.
Exactly. So what we do is we take statistics, apply it, and we give you a visual trading platform. In addition to the shows talking about these same concepts, where you can set up a trade using options, and if you're saying that you think the stock will stay in a particular range over a period of time, you can actually sell those options, that range, and that increases your probability of success. So that's actually a really powerful message. You're not running in there taking a complete blind shot over 50-50. Instead, you can dial it up or dial it down depending upon, you know, that risk reward, right? So you're saying, I really want to be conservative. I want a 90% probability of success here. You know, maybe that return on capital is smaller, but if you're saying, I'm just going to do this in small increments, right? That's what we teach. Trade small, trade often. We don't ever want you to go out and risk the ranch on, you know, one trade. It's about feeling comfortable. Just like if you need to, you know, you want to learn a particular sport, you get better at it by practicing, right?
Do you have practice programs? Because I know Thinkorswim had a practice. Didn't they have a whole practice segment that you could do?
Yeah, they did. The paper money program.
Right. And so do you do a similar thing where people can sort of practice those trades before they have to go in on them?
We absolutely do. That's what Doe does, is there is a, on the trading platform itself, you can set it up and you can actually save it to the journal and see and track it in how it would have done.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that ability to do it. In addition to that, we also provide the Dojo, which is a, it's our education module. Again, this is all free, Elise, which is wonderful for the end user. We have it on the smartphone. The iPhone, the iPad, and then of course you can get to it on the web, but it's all free to the end user. So you can go and you can take our little quizzes. We have videos that explain concepts in kind of a fun, entertaining way. And then you can take a quiz at the end to see if you actually understand that concept. And then again, you can go watch the show and see how they're applying it, and then go watch real trades in real time with real people, and then you could actually go do it yourself, all on the same platform. And again, Tasty Trade streams live through the Doe platform as well, and that's part of the watching under the Doe TV.
I'm going to have to jump in because we have to go to a commercial break, You being in the video business that you're in, you don't have commercial breaks. But we have to live and die by them. So hang on. We're going to come back and talk to Christy Ross in just a moment. She's the co-CEO of Doe.com, D-O-U-G-H.com, which, as you've been hearing, is an online trading platform that marries really interesting financial content along with learning processes and the actual doing. And we'll talk to her in just a moment. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Join us for Atlanta's Morning News Monday for breaking news. Kirk Mellish's 5-day forecast, what could be the beginning of the longest heat wave of the summer. And team coverage traffic updates every 6 minutes, bright and early, beginning at 4:30 Monday morning on WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. We have Christy Ross with us again. She has a really interesting platform at Doe.com, D-O-U-G-H, which allows you to do all sorts of options trading, learn, watch, learn, do. Did I get that right, Christy?
You did.
So what is the one thing you want people to take away with them today as they're doing this? Because you've had so much experience going back through Thinkorswim, which you were the CFO of, and you've started in the Board of Trade, and now you've got this really interesting platform. What's the one thing you want people to understand?
The one thing I want people to understand is that anybody can do this. You don't need a lot of money. You don't need a lot of time. You can do this for, you know, 10 to 15 minutes a day while you're standing in line at Starbucks. And you, it's something that I want to empower everybody out there to be able to feel like they can be a do-it-yourself investor.
Which is such a great thing. Christy, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it, and good luck with Doe.com.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. When we come back, I have somebody really interesting for you to talk to. Amanda Satelli is the managing partner of Satelli & Associates. She's the author of a new book. She is her strategy consulting firm helps companies understand what obstacles are out there that they are facing and how they can be agile, how they can move faster. Maybe you're like me, but I feel like the world is just moving so fast right now that it's really hard to stay ahead of the game, let alone it's even hard to just keep up. So Amanda's come in and she's going to talk to us all about what is the best advice that she gives to her clients about recognizing obstacles, how fast things are going, and how you stay ahead. Stay tuned for all this and more on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. Just a reminder, we're going to have all of the information for all of our guests today up at the thinklink.com website. You can just go there, sign up for the free weekly newsletter, or you can follow us on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. So I recently got introduced to Amanda Satelli. She's sitting right next to me at the studio. She's the managing partner of Satelli & Associates and a friend of ours who's actually been on the show before, Steve Ely of eCredible. Thought that Amanda and I would have a lot to talk about. And as it turns out, he was exactly right. And in fact, I wanted to continue this conversation, so I invited her to be on the show today. She has been worked for some of the biggest consulting firms in the country. And what she specializes in is helping organizations and companies understand what obstacles they're facing in a changing marketplace and what they can do to actually move faster to either keep up with the change, get ahead of the curve, whatever it's going to be to make them super successful. Here in Atlanta, where she's lived for quite a while, she went to, after coming back from Harvard Business School, she has been the past president of the Harvard Business School Club of Atlanta. But she seems to be one of the most connected people around. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Elise. It's great to be here.
So she has a new book, and this has really intrigued me, and you should go and get this book. It's called The Agility Advantage. Agility Advantage. Why use the word agility?
It was a word that I began to use just as an experiment, and I found that people just really picked up their ears when they heard it, and they were like, that's what I've been missing, the agility. They saw that they were experiencing changes in their market that they didn't know what to do about, but all of that corporate sludge kept them from being able to move as quickly as they wanted to. So it's one of those things that everybody wants and nobody's quite sure how to get it. And my goal was to figure out how to do that.
So being agile is something that I think people can relate to, particularly around technology, where it seems like there's all these technology solutions that make us more productive. You know, we just had a guest on, Christy Ross, talking about her Dough.com and tasty trading platforms where on your phone you can do options trading, which is another discussion for another week about whether that's a good idea. But the idea that you can actually harness this enormous power. I mean, you think about how you used to have to trade options. You had to have an options broker. It was a very cumbersome, time-consuming sort of process, and they're packaging it to make you more agile in that marketplace. So the things that you do for clients, making them more agile, how do you help them identify those problems? And then what are some of the solutions that companies and individuals can use themselves?
Well, let me first talk about what some of the problems are. So companies are usually, there's three things you need to mainly do to be agile. And companies are often good at two of them, but not good at the third. And it can be any of the three that they're bad at. The first one is to have your eyes and ears open. So see the change and be objective about the change, mm-hmm. to really realize that the change is happening. The second one is to deal creatively with, okay, I see these changes happening. Some of them are scary, but how am I going to exploit the change? How am I going to do something differently than what my competitor does? Because if we all see the same changes and we all make the same choices, we just end up still competing with the same people on the
right.
same terms. And the third thing that companies need to be good at is to be able to execute in a really flexible way, because you don't just change once, right? You keep changing.
Oh, it's nonstop.
Yes.
I like to joke that I'm reinventing myself about every 18 months.
Oh, my gosh. Everybody has to be doing that these days.
Do you think that comes from that whole Intel chip thing where every 18 months, like, the computing power doubled? And I forget what that's called.
Moore's Law.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway, carry on.
Yes, I do think it comes from that. But it also comes from just the incredible creativity of the human brain. We all want to be creative, and we want to collaborate with each other. And people are just always thinking of new ideas, and it's much easier to do now than it used to be.
So interesting. So when you work with companies, where do they, how do you translate that to your own life? Because I think that people feel trapped. You know, we hear week in, week out, people on the show, they call in and they feel stuck. You know, being stuck is a big motif of this show. People get stuck in personal problems, in real estate problems, certainly in financial problems. They get stuck at their job. They get stuck at their companies. So being stuck is certainly, it's really hard to be agile if you feel like you're walking through jello.
Right.
How do you take that first step? How do you self-identify, or what are some things, some tricks of the trade that you could share with us that would help people unstick themselves?
So I think what causes people to be stuck is that they keep getting better and better at the things that made them, you know, that have created their success to date.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens to companies too, right? They keep getting faster and faster, more and more low cost, and they keep on just getting more and more efficient without keeping their eyes and ears open and thinking about what could I do differently. So my belief is, and I've just become more and more adamant about this as I've studied it more, is that the only thing that's going to get you out of those ruts, those sticking places, is change. I mean, external change that's going on around you. And that if you can think of change as the thing that creates the opportunities for you, you keep your eyes open and you realize that it's something that you can exploit and capitalize and make work for you instead of being a scary thing.
So I love that, because one of the things that I do to coach myself into all these changes, because everybody's like, oh, you're such a change agent. But, you know, it's like scary for me, too.
Right.
Where, you know, I look out and I see, you know, journalism, which is where I started my career, collapsing to the point where there are the same number of journalists that there were back in 1950, you know, and here we are in 2014. So you have to coach yourself into new and different areas. And I like to say on the show that if you're really stuck, a step in any direction is a step in the right direction.
Right. So that's the key. You've hit it on the head, which is that you've got to take the first step and begin to experiment. So just a simple example, I went to my favorite sushi restaurant one night, and they were trying this thing which was you can make your own sushi. Well, that was really interesting. It's like, I didn't know how to make sushi, and so I'm sitting there trying to roll it up, and of course I do everything wrong, and it ends up totally mangled. But that was an experiment. And you know what? They only tried it for a couple of weeks. It didn't work out.
Because everybody else was like, your sushi looks better than mine.
Right.
I don't want to eat mine.
But at least they tried something. And
right.
I would recommend to people in their own individual lives, if they're feeling stuck, try something. Try an experiment that maybe is fairly low risk, but it gives you learning. And that's where you know what the next step to take is.
So when we were having coffee before the show, we were talking a little bit about some of the biggest obstacles or the biggest change things that your companies are seeing. And I was thinking to myself, you know, one of them is this idea of user-generated content and how that sort of affects companies. And we were talking about some examples of how that affects people in real lives as well. And small business owners who are listening to the show are going to feel that. So how do you take a situation like that where, you know, journalism's collapsed because of it, people do user-generated content, how do you take that and make that a win for you?
I think the biggest thing that you need to do is realize that it's an old adage, but, you know, a complaint is a gift in a way. And that if you can just have an interaction, a dialogue with your customers, that's always better than no information. And so creating platforms for your customers to interact with you, creating ways for customers to contribute, just gives you such rich information that you can act on that maybe your competitor isn't paying attention. And so if you're paying attention, the more that you can get that dialogue going, the better off you're going to be, and you're going to be the one who's going to make the right decisions about what to try next.
So I also love the idea of spying on your competitors. So you can use Google to your advantage,
right?
Or Bing, if you're really a Bing person. You can use Google, and you can search out your competitors and what people are saying about them, because the complaints about your competitors could provide an opportunity to do something better in your own shop or take on a new line of business, I would think.
Oh, definitely.
So we talk, you know, to our clients in the content marketing space, you know, we always say to them, well, let's take a look and see what your competitors are doing. And how does that inform, for a better or worse situation, what you should be doing? And you don't have to call them on the phone anymore. I mean, this is all can happen digitally. It's, you know, one of the beauties of the internet. What do you advise people as a first step? Is it this more, get more information? Is it identify the problems? How do you get people to actually outline their future?
Oh, well, that's a big question. But
I know we only have 2 minutes to the break. But
I wanted to say one thing on the competitor issue, which is it's remarkable how many companies do not even use the competitor's product. They almost have like an unwritten rule that every employee has to use only our product.
Ah.
And it's so dysfunctional because you need your employees, you need your executives to try the competitor's product and try to love the competitor's product. See what there is to love about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really put yourself in that shoes of falling in love with the competitor and see what it feels like. And then do something completely different than what they're doing. Because that's the key. If you just try to copy what everybody loves about the competitor, you're just going down a no-win road.
You know, it's so interesting. So when in my seller's book, 100 Questions Every Home Seller Should Ask, one of the things that I said is when you're thinking about your home and you're writing up the listing for it, you have to remember what made you fall in love with that house to begin with, right? So you're talking about really the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about what made you want to buy that house, right, thinking of the house as the product,
mm-hmm.
you'll be able to sell that product, the house, to somebody else. And you're really saying exactly the same thing, that if you can love what your competitor is doing,
mm-hmm.
you can imagine how you're going to bring those kinds of people, customers, to your own door, because it sort of opens it up. So I have this, we have to take a quick break, but I have this idea that we should just wrap up with, that you have to be able to step outside your company to give it some fresh eyes and be able to recognize the better and the worse of it to be able to move forward.
That objectivity is key, and increasing the porosity between your company and customers, suppliers, business partners, the world in general, is just absolutely essential to see what's going on around you that you can capitalize on.
So I'm talking with Amanda Satelli. Her book is called The Agility Advantage, How to Identify and Act on Opportunities in a Fast-Changing World. We'll put up the link at Amazon. She's going to come back in another minute. Stay tuned. I'm Elise Glink. This is The Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB. Welcome back, everybody, to The Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB. My guest in the studio is Amanda Satelli. She's the managing partner of Satelli & Associates, and her book, which you can order right now, especially all those people who are listening online and not driving. If you're driving, it'll be harder. The Agility Advantage, How to Identify and Act on Opportunities in a Fast-Changing World, is available right now for pre-order at Amazon.com. It actually gets published somewhere around October 1st. You can follow her on Twitter at A-S-E-T-I-L-I, A. Satelli.
Yes.
Amanda, when you look at people, you know, in companies, and you're working with the senior leadership, and they identify a problem, how do you get them to take the first step? What is the thing that you say to them that they have to actually do to embrace the problem?
Well, just defining the problem is actually a huge part of the process. The next thing that we usually do is just understand what on earth is going on out there. So what are customers saying? How is their behavior changing? What's happening with competition? How is competition changing? What's happening with regulations and things like that? But that sounds a little analytical. Really, I think the essence of it is to just say, what do we want to achieve together? You know, what would you love to have accomplished 6 months from now?
Well, don't you say to them, you've got to love your problem?
I do.
Or you're never going to be able to solve it?
You have to love the problem. And by that, I mean the problem you're trying to solve for customers. It's what creates the juice that keeps everybody going every day. Because, you know, the biggest motivator for employees is not money and recognition and stuff like that. It's just making progress towards a meaningful goal. That's what I want to see every day, is that, oh, I made some progress, right? So loving the problem is a good way to do that.
All right, you can find Amanda online at Satelli.com, S-E-T-I-L-I.com, or you can follow her on Twitter, A-S-E-T-I-L-I.com. We'll put all that stuff up at ThinkLink.com. And we will also put the link to her book, The Agility Advantage, How to Identify and Act on Opportunities in a Fast-Changing World. You must read this, whether you have a big company, a small company, you're just on your own, you want to go get started in business.
this is a place to start. Amanda, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was fun.
All right. Coming up next, Austin Allison, who is the CEO at Dotloop, is going to join us to talk about how to get deals done by providing everybody with one set of documents, which I think sounds amazing. And they've been trying to do it in real estate for absolutely ever. And let's see if we can actually do it. His book is called People Work, How to Run a People First Business. So stay tuned for that. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. Don't forget to go to the website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com, and follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at Glink. So our next guest is a guy named Austin Allison. I just love that name. He's the CEO at a company called Dotloop, and he's got a real interesting story on real estate. And what I'm hoping that you're going to take away is the idea that anything is possible. Change your life, change your moment, whatever it's going on in your life at this moment, you can change that. Austin bought his first house when he was 17 years old, became a licensed real estate agent at 18, sold real estate all through undergrad, then started his company, Dotloop, in his first year of law school at Cincinnati College of Law. And what he's doing now is absolutely could, well, I think it's already changing the way that real estate is done. Austin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, because everybody's listening at home. I've got a lot of real estate agents and mortgage lenders and people interested in buying and selling. How the heck did you buy a house when you were 17? How did that happen?
Well, I was 17 years old, and I needed something to focus on, and I was always pretty passionate about real estate. I grew up in a construction family in Cincinnati, Ohio, and saved up a few thousand bucks, which at the time, the mortgage brokers on the call can relate to how easy it was to get financed.
Oh, yeah, you just needed a pulse, and a good credit score. You didn't have the credit score at 17, but
right.
You must have had a pulse.
Yeah, I had a pulse, and I had parents. So fortunately, my parents bought the home in their name, but it was my first piece of real estate, and that's what created the spark for me.
So when you started working in real estate, when you were selling real estate and going to college, what were you thinking, what am I doing going to college?
Yeah, real estate was something that I became passionate about from the moment I bought that first house, and I went to college for real estate development, actually, and then on to law school after that, as you mentioned. And real estate was just always something that I felt like I could, you know, do and control and have the flexibility to work on my own schedule and service people in my network. So I just felt like it was the right career to spend time on at that point in time.
So what does Dotloop do, and how did you develop that?
Dotloop streamlines the cumbersome process of buying or selling a home for all the parties involved in the real estate transaction, from, of course, the real estate agents and the buyers and sellers, but also real estate brokers and the other core professionals of the transaction, like mortgage, title, and insurance. And the way that I came about it was through selling real estate. I was 15 minutes into my first transaction when I thought to myself, there has to be a better way. And this was 10 years ago now, when I first started selling real estate. And primarily due to my age, if you can recall back 10 years ago, the internet was really starting to influence the way that we live and work. And it had not yet influenced the way that we buy or sell real estate yet. And I wanted to change that.
So the whole concept behind Dotloop is one set of documents that everybody signs and uses, right? Isn't that how it works?
Yeah, that's a big piece of it. But the broader theme is that Dotloop is a workspace, because real estate is not about real estate transaction anyway, are not about bricks and mortar or pen and paper. It's about people. And every single real estate transaction involves lots of people, from buyers and sellers to agents to mortgage to title to insurance. And the purpose of Dotloop is to enable all those people to work together seamlessly and efficiently in one place online. And it just so happens that working together involves documents and signatures and, you know, all of those things. But the core concept is creating a place where people can work together efficiently on the web.
So how does it actually work? Like, it's free, I know, to sign up for Dotloop. How do you guys make money?
The way that it works is a real estate agent or any entity that's involved in the transaction, for that matter, creates one of these online workspaces that we call Loops. And once the workspace is created, you can invite anybody you want to the Loop to view and sign documents or negotiate the deal. The way that we make money is by delivering features and functionality that we package as a premium product offering for real estate professionals and the other professionals involved in the transaction. We also have a business level offering that we make money on as well, where we power real estate offices. So we have about 3,000 real estate brokerage offices that run on Dotloop. And the reason why offices run on Dotloop is to be more efficient and compliant in the way that they run their business.
So I can imagine that Dotloop just wouldn't end up being, and this is probably why you have a VC in San Francisco, wouldn't just be in the real estate business big as it is. I imagine there are other worlds that you could conquer with the same sort of concept.
There are certainly use cases outside of real estate where Dotloop could add a lot of value, but the real estate market is a big space, and it's something that we're pretty passionate about, and we feel like we're just at the beginning of a multi-year journey to streamline and connect the ecosystem of people in real estate. So that's been focused around real estate agents and real estate brokerages to date. We are starting to see more real estate related companies, though, using Dotloop to run more efficient businesses. Some of those companies are mortgage, title, warranty, inspection. So anybody who participates in the real estate transaction could certainly benefit by running on Dotloop.
All right, so you're clearly passionate about how technology can make people, you know, work better, but it still seems like you want to put people first. And, in fact, your book is called People Work, How to Run a People-First Business in a Digital-First World. So that's interesting that you've actually gone out there and said, we are now digital-first, right? Digital-facing, everything, technology is going to take over every single business that there is. Pretty soon I won't be able to host the show. The computer will do it. But what, when you look at, you know, when you were writing this book, tell me a little bit about how you were trying to imagine this people work concept. Like, how do you run a business that's people first if everything is supposed to be technology oriented?
Well, the book was really a byproduct of what we've built at Dotloop. So we kind of came across the book by accident, if you will. And the way that we discovered the concepts and principles in people work is just by putting people first in our business. So it started with me selling real estate, and I recognized that real estate was at its core a relationship business that involved people working with other people. And I was experiencing in my life as a real estate professional that as the world became more and more connected and we were using technology to do more and more things online, I found that it actually increased the importance of putting people first. And we built our entire business at Dotloop by doing that, from the way that we service customers to the way that we sell to the way that we thought about our product from day one as being a place where people could come together and get work done. And after, 5 years of building this business, we started reflecting on the fact that what we really do is we help real estate agents and real estate brokers put people first in their businesses as well. And so we wrote a book about it, and we extracted some of the principles that defined how we build our business, and we hoped that they would be applicable to other people, and clearly they were.
So give me one or two examples of what are some of these things that you should be doing if you own a company and you want to keep people at the forefront.
So one great example is this notion that service is the best form of marketing. And the real estate industry is an industry that spends a lot of money on marketing, be it, you know, buying leads or billboards or investing in the brand, you know, all these things that real estate agents and real estate brokerages spend a lot of money on, and it's been core to the business for a long time. Well, in a world where anybody can buy leads and the traditional forms of access and distribution have been commoditized by the internet, service is in fact the greatest differentiator and the greatest form of marketing. So, you know, one of the things that we do as a technology company is we invest heavily in service. Oftentimes technology businesses will try to minimize their investments in service by driving people to self-help sites and things like that. We actually don't. Service represents 30%+ of our entire team at Dotloop, and we plan to keep it that way because we found that servicing our customers is the best form of marketing. And the same concept applies to, you know, real estate and related businesses as well. And that's just one example.
So I'm talking to Austin Allison. He's the CEO at a company called Dotloop, which has won all kinds of awards. And you told me before we went on air, you're actually 29?
29, that's correct.
Wow. It's very, very impressive. All right, when we come back, I want you to think about what are some mistakes, and I know that you're going to say not investing in service, but now, aside from that one, what are some mistakes that companies are making, and, you know, when they want to, they have a people-first business, but they are running in a tech world, and we've been having this conversation all day about how do you keep up with the pace of change. So think about that, yeah. Austin, and we're going to take a short break. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. I'm engaged in this, well, we are all engaged in this really interesting conversation with Austin Allison. He's the CEO at a company called Dotloop, and you can find it at dotloop.com. And he's also the author of a book called People Work, How to Run a People-First Business in a Digital-First World. The book is available right now at Amazon. I'm going to go buy it as soon as this interview's over. But you should think about it as well, because I think what we're looking for is this kind of transitional period that we're in where many of us are running people businesses, and yet technology is dominating the landscape. Austin, aside from the fact that companies are not investing enough in service, which I think is a serious problem, what other mistakes do you see companies make, and how does that play out?
So there's a principle in the book called quality creates quantity. And the concept is that if you invest in quality, it ends up creating quantity over time. So to answer your question, I would say that the biggest mistake that we see in real estate is a focus on quantity. And, you know, one example of this is focusing on quantity in the area of lead generation or marketing. Historically, we've thought about more leads means more business and, you know, more revenue as a result. What we found, though, is that if you focus on what happens after the lead is generated to ensure that the experience is a quality experience that lasts a lifetime, you end up making more money and getting more customers over time. And I have a real-life example of that. I was recently looking for a home in a new market, and I got on the local sites and also the portals in this particular market. And I found a home that I wanted to tour, and I met this real estate agent there who was listing the property. And I did this with a couple of different properties. And three out of the four properties that three out of the four agents that I contacted, once they found out I wasn't interested in that one property, I never heard from them again. And one or two of the agents weren't responsive at all originally. But of the one that was responsive, never heard from them again. There was this one agent, however, his name was Mike. I met Mike at this particular listing. It turns out that the listing wasn't something that I was interested in. Well, Mike focused on, from that moment forward, Mike focused on quality, and he focused on maintaining a relationship with me for what would later become, you know, several months and eventually more than a year. Eventually, I ended up buying a home from Mike. Because he focused on me as a person, focused on the quality of our interactions as opposed to me as a lead. I build a relationship with Mike. I'll continue to buy homes from Mike. I'll refer Mike to everybody that I know.
And Mike just hit the lottery.
Mike
won the lottery.
Right.
Austin Ellison is the CEO of Dot Loop. It is such a practical, common sense way to run a business. I really congratulate you. DotLoop.com. The book is called People Work, How to Run a People First Business in the Digital First World. And it sounds like there's lots of lessons for all of us. Austin, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Stay tuned. John Heithouse is coming on next. And I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5. At AM 750, WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the East Clean Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. So continuing our discussion of real estate and technology and all kinds of cool stuff, I invited my friend John Heithouse onto the show today. I've known John, I don't know, for a long time. I'm not going to go into actual numbers anymore now that I've had a big birthday, but John today is the chief strategy officer for a company called Buyer MLS, and it is the industry's first and only buyer marketplace for residential real estate. I like to call it Match.com meets the real estate industry, because basically what happens is that brokerages and agents turn their buyers into data, and then everybody gets to sort of match it up so that the right buyers are getting a look at the right kind of houses for sale, the right sellers are looking at the right buyers, and it all can lead to new opportunities for everybody. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So this buyer MLS stuff, I know you guys are already in market and you're working with how many brokers?
We're 35 brokers.
35 brokers and how many agents?
Somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,200.
3,200 agents. That's amazing. So each agent is clearly working with more than one buyer or seller, and so you've got a fairly large and I'm sure growing fast pool of people to look at. What are you guys noticing about how brokers, buyers and sellers agents, deal with their clients and how they deal with each other across the buyer MLS platform?
Sure. Well, as with any technological innovation, the Internet has been great for real estate because it's injected speed and transparency to the process. In my corporate career, I actually relocated 7 times and bought and sold a house both times. And there were no tools together. My last move was about 12 years ago. There weren't really tools and resources available like they are today to help me become certainly a more informed purchaser, but also aware of a number of the peripheral issues involved in real estate. There's, you know, heat maps and more in-depth school reports and crime maps.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, and some stuff that, however, gets into the territory that I'd like to call TMBI, which is too much bad information. Just because it's on the Internet doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. So
Right. While
the Internet and the technological revolution we've experienced in the last 10 years and things going mobile has been incredibly good for the real estate consumer, both buyers and sellers, it's also kind of, you know, hit them with a fire hose of data and information, not all of which they can analyze on their own, and sometimes it cripples a good decision as opposed to facilitates one. So it's a mixed bag of benefits.
Really interesting. So when you look at, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because there's just been so much news recently in real estate, and you have been working in real estate forever at all kinds of levels. You've worked with Coldwell Banker and Prudential and Monster.com, MRIS, which is the big MLS based out in the D.C. area.
Yes, ma'am.
And your family has been in real estate. And so when you look out at real estate, what do you see as some of the big trends coming up now?
Well, in some ways, without sounding like a fuddy-duddy, the more things change, the more things stay the same. The fundamentals of a real estate search are unchanged in the last 150 years of the organized business. People want to make a good buying decision. They want to settle in a place where they could potentially make a good quote-unquote investment, even though we both know that real estate is really more like a friend with benefits, where you get to live somewhere with a tax break as opposed to it being an investment vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, people want what they've always wanted. The what's changed, aside from this plethora of information that gets dumped on them, is the fluidity of the process. It hasn't been changed. It still takes you and I, if you were selling something and I decided to buy today, it would still take us, you know, 35, 45, 60 days to contract, get a title company, and close.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen that much faster.
Right. And yet, if I wanted this afternoon to go out and take a lease out on a, you know, $250,000 Lamborghini, I could do that in about 45 minutes. And that asset has wheels.
When are we doing that, going out in the Lamborghini?
As soon as we can afford it.
Okay, there you go.
But the fluidity of that process is pretty straightforward.
Sure.
Technology hasn't really brought the benefits to the transaction that, you know, consumers not only have come to expect, but you need for things to take that long. And, you know, the home search process is called that way for a reason. It's a house hunting. And again, technology doesn't necessarily, other than me filling out a form saying I'm looking for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house in, you know, these particular areas, it can do all the matching in the world. What technology, and this is obviously where buyer MLS comes in, where technology and the finite matching make a big benefit is for home buyers. You know, if you're a qualified buyer, you stand to the front of the line because your profile speaks for itself as a well-qualified, transaction-ready buyer.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a seller, of course, who's interested in not only getting the highest price, but they want the deal to stick and make it to closing, they want to be dancing with the most qualified person as well. So that's where technology, I think, is starting to enter into the business, and we're seeing it in a couple different places where a fundamental shift in the way you buy or sell a house is occurring because of technology. Up until now, they just did old things faster. Now it's becoming a lot more modern and certainly intuitive.
So one of the things, let's turn a little bit to news in the tech real estate world, because as we heard from our last guest on the show who started Dot Loop, you know, it's a tech-driven world, but a people-first business. That's how he characterizes it, Austin Allison. And yet here we are in the real estate side, and we've got the recent news that Zillow is buying Trulia.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to dwarf Realtor.com.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one piece of news. And then the other piece of news, which recently came across the thing, is that the National Association of Realtors is going to manage the new .realtor internet domain.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we've got homes.com is going to do .homes.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have .realtor as opposed to not just realtor.com and realtor.org, just in case we're all really confused if you're playing at home.
And really, to add to that, Elise, if you were to do a market survey of people under 30 years old and you asked them what a realtor is, with all due respect to my friends in Chicago at the National Association, the consumer has no idea what a realtor is.
No, and they don't. And so the idea, you know, when they think about real estate, they think about Trulia and Zillow, which are publicly traded technology companies, and they're lead generation companies, and they think about all of the eyeballs that come and what they can sell to them.
Sure.
Which is a very different perspective than a realtor who should be thinking about the one purchase that these people are going to make and then facilitating that in their universe. And so when you and I both started in this game, you know, years ago, this was a very different world. It was real estate was a world that really was held very closely by the realtors, and all the information was inside, and you really had to knock on the door of the realtor to get access to it. And today, all this information lives outside, and realtors, from my perspective at least, are trying to make themselves still useful and relevant.
Well, they're getting competition from the web for sure, and websites like Zillow and Trulia have done an outstanding job of presenting a consumer value proposition. I mean, for instance, it wasn't an invention on their part; it was an innovation to bring this estimate, you know, an automated valuation estimate to the table. So, in the past, if you wanted to get an idea of what your house was worth, you'd need to invite a real estate agent over who'd conduct a competitive market analysis research and kind of present you with a piece of paper, also with a listing agreement, of course, you know, to go from there. Today, I can just go right on any of half a dozen websites, not just Zillow, but a number of other ones, and the friends at Realtor.com are also going to be adding one. It doesn't preclude my need to speak with a realtor, but it provides a convenient point. The devil in that, however, is, and I'm trained as an appraiser, so I know this firsthand, the range of value and the final kind of estimate these folks come up with are notoriously inaccurate.
Oh, I've railed about this forever with Zillow, which is that, you know, it may be right, but more likely it's completely wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of individual you know, aspects of an appraisal. Not only as it pertains to the competing sales, but also, you know, the features of the property. And just because I spent 30 grand for a swimming pool, I'm not going to be able to add 30,000 onto my asking price, assuming that a willing buyer is going to pay that. And so the AVM model has to take those things into account. Say, well, how much do consumers value, you know, a certain amenity? And they try to put a price on it. But extremely difficult on a national level without the benefit of inspecting the property and having the legal culpability that an appraiser in that particular case takes by signing their name to the bottom line.
Right. So there's just so much changing there.
I mean, tech is great. It's not unlike the music business.
Well, which you're in also. I didn't even say that, but you have a music company.
Sure. Well, and the only reason it's relevant to this discussion is there are a number of parallels as well. And how do you monetize your intellectual property in a world where your product is free? In a real estate broker's world, their listing is put out on the internet in hundreds and hundreds of real estate sites. You know, that information is now being provided for free to people, no obligation, to look around and kick the tires. And then you're kind of on your own to be making some decisions, where in the past you'd at least have the benefit of the counsel of a tenured real estate professional to color the information that you've got to help you, you know, place it in context with regard to your specific situation.
So interesting what's going on. I really want to ask you what you think is going to come out of this Zillow and Trulia merger, because it's true. We have to take a quick break, but I want you to think about it during our commercial break, because I just think there are going to be profound implications that maybe neither of us can figure out. But I want to look ahead and
sure.
just come back and spend a couple of
okay.
minutes doing that. I'm talking with my good friend John Heithouse. He's the Chief Strategy Officer for Buyer MLS. It's like Match.com for real estate. Buyers and sellers and buyers agents and sellers agents getting together and figuring out who's going to be the right buyer, who's going to be the right seller. BuyerMLS.com. And he has been around the real estate business forever. So we're going to talk a little bit more about Zulia. Maybe that's what they're going to call it. Zulia. No, Zillow and Trulia. When we come back on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750. WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB. I am talking to my good friend, John Heithouse, the Chief Strategy Officer for Buyer MLS. It is the industry's first and only buyer marketplace for the residential real estate industry, and it helps brokers and agents transform buyer data into an asset. Sounds like a big tech play, and that seems to be the theme of today's show. John, looking at the Zillow and Trulia merger, which I called before the break Zulia, which I'm sure I'll hear from somebody about that, how do you think it's going to transform things?
Sure. Well, from two perspectives. Obviously, there's things have to settle in, and we have to assume that the government's going to approve the merger and all that.
Right.
But that being said, it's important for folks to keep in mind, from a consumer perspective, these are not exclusive sites. There are hundreds of sites that have the same exact information that Zillow and Trulia present. A number of multiple listing services have what they call public-facing portals, so they present listing information out. Of course, all the brokerage firms and agents have listings displayed, so them merging is not like your neighborhood bank, you know, getting scarfed up by a big Wall Street bank, and, you know, you're going to lose access to your money or have to access it in a different way. It's really got a very, very nominal effect, in my view, for a consumer. It really impacts Wall Street more than it impacts Main Street.
So what about brokers, though? Because I do
think
it's...
Well, that's the second side. So
yeah.
Scarcity creates demand in real estate, which is one of the, you know, the fundamental tenets of how the business works. And if the demand for real estate advertising continues and there's a consolidation of suppliers, the economics would dictate that those suppliers have some kind of pricing power. And they may well find, you know, they have to test what the market will bear in terms of price elasticity, but the potential for a more costly advertising environment would certainly be a logical outcome there. So professionally, keep an eye on it. It may raise your costs. Of course, they're coming out with a list of benefits they think the professional community will potentially realize. And then from a consumer standpoint, it's really a yawn. It really doesn't mean anything. They're operating the site separately. It's not like some revolutionary change is going to come to either of their operations.
So you can still get your Zestimate, whether it's good,
yeah,
bad, indifferent. It's still there for you.
Trulia has their own version of one. And as you see, Zillow Corporate is looking to position themselves like the parent company of the travel sites, IAC Interactive, where they own a whole bunch of brands under one big umbrella,
right,
some of which compete with each other.
Right. And I have to just say that the amount of traffic that Zillow and Trulia get just absolutely dwarf Realtor.com.
Oh, my heavens.
It's about 80% of what's out there, and then the rest go out. John, we have to go.
Well, I really appreciate the visit. Thank you so much.
It's the end of the show. I'm so sorry, though, because I would love to have you come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about real estate and the real estate market.
I look forward to the invitation. Thank you.
Good. All right. John is the Chief Strategy Officer for Buyer MLS. You can find him on Twitter, JLH_CMO, or at Buyer MLS. And if you're a real estate company, you're going to be hearing more about them. I'm Elise Glenk. Thanks so much for listening. We got to go. The music's playing. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week. Be sure to go online to thinklink.com to get all of the information for today's guests. Have a good one.